The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Well, although last night's World Cup final didn't end up with a victory for our under-20s against France, the general consensus still seems to be that the young players on that team have bright futures ahead of them. Earlier this week, I caught up with a man who's seen plenty of glory days on the rugby pitch and who is widely regarded as one of the greatest players ever to wear an All Blacks jersey. During his 20-year career, he broke several world records and scored the winning points in the 2015 Rugby World Cup final, earning him his third IRB Player of the Year award and a second consecutive World Cup win for New Zealand. Since retiring, he's carved out a career sharing his insights into the leadership skills he learned as an elite sportsman. His new book is called The Art of Winning, and it's just been published, and he is, of course, Dan Carter. I began by asking him about his childhood and when he first developed an interest in rugby.
We grew up in this little community called Southbridge. 750 people lived there, and they lived and breathed rugby. A farming community that all congregated down to the local rugby club every Saturday to follow the senior side and all the junior rugby. But my passion for the game and my desire to be an All Black started when I was 5 years old. And that was in 1987. And I'm showing my age now, but it was the inaugural Rugby World Cup that was co-hosted in New Zealand and Australia. And there were a couple of key players, and John Kerwin scoring a try that ran the length of the field against the Italians in the opening game. Michael Jones for the All Blacks, just playing fantastic rugby. And then the All Blacks went on to win that World Cup. And I remember the captain of the final, Dave Kirk, holding the William Webb Ellis Cup above his head. And something was ingrained in me as a five-year-old. I go, right, that's my dream. All I want to do is be an All Black. I never actually thought it would happen, but that's where my passion for the game and passion for wanting to be an All Black came from.
Well, what's interesting is only 17 years later, you were 22, and that's when you became an All Black. And what was it, do you think, they saw in you that they sort of, you know, gave you what was an important role at such an early age?
A lot of my success goes to the back of my childhood. I spent thousands and thousands and thousands of hours out there playing rugby, kicking goals, playing with my mates, and that's where I built up my skill set. So as I started making provincial sides like Canterbury and then professional rugby like the Crusaders, every step that I took, I seemed to become more comfortable. So I guess they saw sort of a clear, calm, young 22-year-old that was able to step up to each challenge that was put in front of him. So at that stage of my career, I learned pretty quickly around work ethic, so that they saw a hard worker. So, you know, trying to get first to training, trying to be the last one to leave, doing a lot of extra work outside of the training to grow my game to be the best player I possibly could. So I think that there are a couple of little things that they saw early on in my career and the reason that they, you know, they trusted me with a black jersey.
And obviously then your career took off and you had such a fantastic career as an All Black rugby player. But when it came time to retire, you didn't really necessarily feel that it was time to retire. You were putting it on the back burner a little bit. But you mentioned about having a sense of what were you going to do now and not maybe having doubts about your own abilities in areas like business or in boardrooms and things like that.
Yeah, it was just something very new for me, and I was still trying to figure out what's next. You know, is it going to be an involvement in rugby? Is it going to be an involvement in business? And if it's a business, what context? So there were a lot of opportunities that were in front of me, and the challenge for me was making sure that I had a framework to almost say no to more things, because the temptation and the fear of missing out on opportunities, you tend to just say yes to far too many things. But I now had some framework after working with Kevin Roberts and helping me repurpose my life and understanding a lot more about who I am as a person and what I'm passionate about. Through that repurposing process, I learned that I was obsessed with winning, and a lot of my success were off the back of some really important learnings. and really important lessons that I learned through playing professional rugby for almost 20 years and amongst the All Black culture for 13 years. And a lot of people would say to me, well, what are the highlights of your career? And it wasn't the two Rugby World Cup winners' medals that we got. It wasn't the three World Rugby Player of the Year awards that I got. It was actually the fact that I was able to inspire the next generation of rugby players, just as I was as a five-year-old boy when I looked up to the All Blacks that won the World Cup. I felt like when I finished playing, I was able to inspire the next generation. So I was really motivated about my obsession for winning, but also the ability to give back. And that's what started the framework for the book that I started writing a couple of years ago around the art of winning, which was, you know, 10 lessons that I learned through my playing career, you know, lessons in leadership, purpose, and just, you know, reaching, you know, your full potential. And that's effectively the framework of the book.
One of the things you say is that success, even at the highest level, doesn't insulate you from doubt.
The fact that I've been successful in my rugby career and achieved a lot doesn't mean that I don't have self-doubt, and I have plenty of it, and I have plenty of it throughout my career. And the way you deal with it is really important. And I had some learnings of sort of dealing with that self-doubt throughout my rugby career, that when I finished playing and had you know, some doubt about what's next, whether I was, you know, educated enough to go into business, to had the ability to inspire, you know, younger generations, all those question marks that I had a bit around, you know, this next chapter in my life, you know, there's some learnings that I took. And when I started doing some online talks with the likes of AstraZeneca, who were, you know, building a vaccine for COVID around the time, and they want to learn around sort of dealing with pressure, talk to all the general managers from Louis Vuitton around the All Blacks culture in terms of humility and the emphasis that we put on that to help grow the culture. Surgical teams I was talking to as well around you know, dealing with pressure as well. So all of a sudden I felt like I had this a different education.
So you would have learned so much of these things from, you know, your training, from playing games. And you talk about, you know, handling pressure. One of the things you talk about is a blue head and a red head as a perspective or a way of looking at it when you're under pressure. What are those terms? What does that mean?
So in high performance, you're needing to be performing under pressure. That's where the magic is. And if you're going to go on to win World Cups, you need to execute under the highest amounts of pressure. And we hadn't done that in the All Blacks for 20-odd years before 2011, because we were struggling to deal with the pressures and expectations in big moments. So we spent a lot of time around building our mental strength. And we soon realised when you put under pressure, your mind can go into what they call a state of redhead. And that's where you're not thinking clearly, you're flustered, you can go quiet. Well, basically, you can do one of three things when your mind is in a state of redhead. You can freeze, where you go quiet, you just kind of, your thoughts go in amongst yourself. And that's the state that I used to go into. And as a playmaker, number 10 role, when he's going quiet or in a state of freeze, it's a dangerous place to be in. Another state can be fight, which means you start arguing. You argue with the referee, arguing with your teammates, actually physically wanting to fight someone. Or you can go into a state of flight, which where you just want to get the hell out of there. You don't want to be in that situation when there's too much pressure and you're having to make decisions. So you might, you know, feel your hamstring tighten up and have an injury, you just want to get off the field. So we found out that it was impossible to not go through a game without going into a state of redhead, because in competitive nature, you naturally, you go there at times. But instead of running around the field in a state of redhead where you're not calm, you're not clear, you're not decisive, you're not making good decisions on the run, you need some tools to get out of that state of red. And what I used to do is I slap myself on the leg because my mind is all over the place. And I would want to bring myself back to the now, the here and now. Like, what task do I need to do right now? Okay, I just need to catch the ball. So all of a sudden, I was just focusing on the task in front of me. And that got me back into a blue head. So state in blue, where I was actually calm, I was clear.
Head is very much you're in the moment and what's the next task. And yep. for you to get from one to the other, you just had a kind of a mechanism almost to remind yourself to do that. But I presume part of the red head idea in rugby would be as well, this game's not going our way. Such and such a guy's having a rubbish match. We're going to lose, you know, and you try and find a mechanism to get out of that, to just think about the next thing that you're going to do.
So when you're in a state of red, you're often thinking about an outcome, something that had happened before, whether it's a mistake that you made or something in the future where it's you're thinking about the result. Oh, I hope we don't lose. I look at the scoreboard. We're down by this point. I don't think we're going to win. And you need to be thinking about the process. What's the process that you need to do? And the outcome will take care of itself. So that blue-headed is really process-focused.
You had a few sort of tricky moments as well. One of them when you were in France, in Paris, and you were arrested, pulled over for driving over the limit, which would have been a big deal and a big kerfuffle for somebody like yourself and a well-known sports person?
It was a really challenging moment of my time. I made a huge mistake and I really needed to own up to that and fall on my sword. And you know, there's no one in a situation like that to blame apart from yourself. The key learning that I got from that mistake is the world has got a beautiful way of keeping you grounded. So I just helped the team in 2015 win a Rugby World Cup. Went to France, had a fantastic season with them, won the top 14, made the European final. So everything was going well, almost too well. I probably started to believe that, you know, I was better than I actually was. And then to have a situation like that and be locked up in a French, cell, spending a cell there for the night, you soon start to reflect about the mistake that you made and you know, that fear of, man, I'm lucky I didn't hurt someone. I could have been a lot more serious. It just puts life into perspective and just brings you back down to earth. Okay, make sure you don't get ahead of yourself. You make sure you continue to make, you know, good decisions. And it was a huge learning for me and one that I really needed at that time where I was just getting a little bit cocky and a little bit, you know, ahead of myself.
When you were in Paris, you would have worked with Ronan O'Gara as well, who's gone on to do tremendous things in coaching. He had some very complimentary things to say about you. He wrote actually an article where he once said, he said that Dan would have been a Munster legend if he'd ever joined the province, that he would have savoured those special days with the crew in the provincial outback, concealed in a snug in a bar somewhere in Tip or Waterford or even Kilkenny, settling in for a few hours or a night. He obviously thought highly of you. You must have got on well.
Yeah, we got on really well, especially after my initial comments to him about why he decided to be a defensive coach when the All Blacks spent a whole career trying to attack him because he couldn't tackle. But we got over that, and he was a young, really enthusiastic coach, and what he lacked in, you know, presentation skills, he made up for his willingness to learn. And you could just see he was just taking it all in, and he had this real passion for the game and the players. And when he got the opportunity to coach with the Crusaders, I said, you know, I encouraged him to go, being a Crusader man, because I knew that it would be amazing for his coaching development, what he would learn in the Crusader environment. And he clearly took it all on in there. And now he's found his own coaching style. And what he has created, set up, and consistently executed at La Rochelle is a credit to him as a coach. You know, he's now a world-class coach.
One of the things you did that kind of endeared you, I suppose, to Irish rugby fans was when Ireland finally beat the All Blacks for the first time after 111 years in Chicago in 2016. You posted a sort of a photograph, a bit of a fun photograph of a dejected looking Dan Carter, which people appreciated the sense of humour of it.
Oh, geez,
was that a blow?
Of course it was a blow. Anytime the All Blacks lose is a blow, but let alone to a team like the Irish that had never beaten us before, because you know it was a really proud record that we had, and we'd had some really close encounters throughout my career, and then to finally break that hoodoo and to be there next to someone that I competed against on so many occasions, to watch the game on his phone, and then see the result. You know, I could, as gutted as I was, you know, I knew how much it meant to Ronan, and also the people of Ireland, and all the players that had gone before that incredible team. So it was, I knew how much it meant to the people of Ireland, but unfortunately you've got a taste of success against the All Blacks now, and now you can't stop beating us. So
well, it's happened a few times since, and all eyes will be on the World Cup. Just ahead of the World Cup, what do you think about Ireland's chances in the World Cup? So much has been talked about a lack of progression in the past, and yet there are many things that are different about the team, that seem to be different about the mindset and approach of the team. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's they're clearly, you know, the number one side in the world for a reason. And their development over the last few years under Andy Farrell has been incredible. And I think that's the point of difference. They've always been a world-class side, but haven't delivered in high-pressure situations regularly. So that's why I think that, you know, alongside South Africa and France, you know, that they're right up there with the favourites. You know, I'll obviously be rooting for the All Blacks and confident that they will be there at the end as well. So what I like, and I experienced it when the Irish came out to New Zealand recently, last year, and they played a great style of rugby. A great attacking style of rugby. They were very clinical. They were very accurate. And when they won the series, it wasn't like they'd won a World Cup. They knew that's just a part of the process, or a stepping stone to what they want to achieve and where they want to go. And a lot of that was driven by their senior players and also their coach and Andy Farrell. So I've been really impressed with you know, with the culture that they've built. They're clearly playing for something a lot bigger than themselves, the individuals. And that's why I think that there'll be a different World Cup side than previous Irish World Cup sides that, you know, have stumbled once they get to the playoff stages. So they're going in there as, you know, one of the top teams to look out for, and rightly so, after, you know, everything that they've achieved over the last few years.
What about the idea of not accepting mediocrity and always having to achieve more? And things I've read about you that people will all say about you, that you were a player who was always trying to improve. No matter how good you got, you were always trying to improve. How has that sort of carried you through now beyond your playing days? Do you have to grapple with that a bit? Because are you a bit intolerant of mediocrity and you always push yourself and others to the maximum?
Oh, yeah, it's been a challenge because, you know, in a professional rugby environment, we were always striving for excellence. There was no sort of mediocrity. And, you know, we're always challenging each other if we saw someone cruising. And just having that growth mindset of wanting to be better each day, better than you were yesterday and whatever that means. And that's why you need some real structure and planning in your life to make sure that, you know, I'm not cruising, and I have goals that I'm trying to set each week, and yearly goals that I'm trying to achieve, and also a vision of what impact I'm wanting to leave on this world in 10, 20 years' time. So that's really helped me. But, you know, you soon learn that the people are, you know, can be quite happy with just contentment and just kind of going with the flow. But I'm not one of those people. Like, I'm all
Do those people frustrate you?
I don't like working with those type of people, but I understand, you know, everyone's different.
Before you go, who is going to win the World Cup?
Oh, it's All Blacks. It's absolutely. I'm speaking with my heart here, and
what does your head say?
Oh my goodness. I think the French are the favourites, but I think the All Blacks, what I love about this All Blacks side is obviously not their performances over the last couple of years, but they have got some real hurt from 2019. experienced players. There's a lot of experienced players in the team that were there in 2019. So they've got that hurt of being knocked out in the semi-final. Whereas in 2019, their experienced players like Kieran Reid, Sam Whitelock, Aaron Smith, they've never been to a World Cup and not won it. That's all they knew was success. So to now have that hurt and that hunger from 2019 is just going to give them that extra motivation.
They might be angry and they might end up in the redhead phase, you see, instead of the
blue
head.
They've done far too much work on their mental strength. They're actually going to embrace the pressure and beat the Irish in the final.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Dan Carter, author of The Art of Winning, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time.